Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's October the 18th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. And we'll discuss today's cash grain market with Bill Mayer at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, the Senate Majority Leader wants the Farm Bill moved out of that body before Thanksgiving. Details of the Senate's version of the Farm Bill include a new cap and an ACR, or Average Crop Revenue Program, similar to a proposal from Illinois Democrat Dick Durbin. And there are calls from the ethanol industry to increase the 7.5 million gallon RFS. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to talk about a rocky agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest. It all happens on this Thursday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Board of Trade, the Mercantile Exchange, and in the outside markets is Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Boy, we have lots to talk about today. We've got, we've got crude oil in high territory, the dollar in low territory, bean oil in high territory. We've got a whole slew of things happening on the tech side of the market. Where would you like to start?
Well, it's green day. I guess we're green today, except for the red dollar. I think, you know, what the market is reflecting is, you know, a winding down of harvest pressures. We do have a lot of grain yet to harvest. We do have a lot of grain piles around Illinois and Indiana. But harvest is winding down. So the seasonalities of less hedge pressure and increasing demand and tightening supplies, in a sense, as the grain has found a home, whether it's temporary or not, it has at least found a home. So you're seeing the normal seasonal activity of narrowing basis and rising futures prices as we go into Halloween here.
Did you see some of these numbers that Chuck Carner was throwing around and that had come out from the biodiesel board today?
No, I haven't seen any of those numbers.
Well, there's some pretty good predictions here. Let me give you some numbers. Corn planted area, these are for next year, at 87 million for next year. We're at 93.6, remember, this year. Ending stocks at 1997, that's current. Next year at 1.157 billion soybeans, planted area of 70 million acres. 63.7 is what we're at this year. Ending stocks at 210 for next year, 215 what we're looking for. And that would be the following year, so it would be 08, 09 ending stocks, I'm sure.
Well, in FOMA, I guess I understand they're going to have their numbers out here tomorrow. But I think, you know, numbers are numbers, and I think with the growing demand sector that we're seeing worldwide in agriculture, we're not only growing the food base, but we're growing the renewable fuel base. So you do have both sectors in a expanding mode worldwide. And you even with this year's big crops here in the U.S., we still have world stocks-to-use ratios and all of this stuff down to the point where there's little room for any kind of error as far as production if we would get into weather problems or whatnot next year. So I think the whole underlying demand influence in the marketplace with relatively tight world supplies continues to be reflected.
Let's stay with the beans just a bit. Bean oil making contract highs today in the nearby.
Well, you would think it would with $89 crude oil, with, you know, the prospect of biodiesel fuels, I think, going to have a big kick in the next several years here. I think you're going to see a bigger growth in that sector than you probably will over in the ethanol sector. So as biodiesel gobbles up a lot of these other oils, whether it's rape oil or palm oil or whatnot, it's eventually going to dig into soybean oil inventories. and tighten overall oil supplies. So I think technically the push into new highs in soybean oil opens up about a 5 cent rally or so in soybean oil fairly quickly.
And this comes, I think, in part on oil. Also, Biodiesel Board putting out a production capacity set this afternoon, showing what's available and what expansion looks like. Their prediction is that from May of this year, at 1.11 billion gallons produced, they're looking at a 3.22 billion gallon production in the fall of next year, in September, actually to September of 2007. So that's that was May of last year to this fall. So we tripled our soybean diesel production from May of last year to the fall of this year, and you're expecting a bigger increase even after that, I take it.
Well, it's going to continue to grow. I'm not one for numbers and doing a projection. You can kind of get in trouble with that when you get into projecting what kind of numbers we're going to use down the road. You can kind of point to the, not too far, just go over to corn balance sheet and see how everybody's backpedaling now on the ethanol crush. So, the whole renewable fuel industry is in a growth market. And yes, it's going to have some pauses and some setbacks from time to time, but that's a long-term growth market. I think that the corn and soybeans are going to enjoy that.
On the technical side, which of your charts either looks the strongest or the weakest, corn, soybeans, or wheat?
Well, soybeans probably look the strongest because of the early October decline was less than a 50% retracement of the July-August up move, and now we've resumed the uptrend with some pretty good vigor. We've exceeded the 50% level now on soybeans. So I do like the soybean market for a push into new highs. I think the first upside objective probably on November soybeans is going to be around this 1040 area, give or take a nickel. But we're going to have to see some technical follow-through from today's advances. But today's advance really puts a 1040-type number in play here over the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Can corn follow up and make contract highs too?
I think so. Corn's improved from probably when the last time I maybe talked to you. The decline that we saw here in early October, I thought was a little deep for an underlying bull market. So I was probably thought that maybe corn was more in a recovery mode. And you could see until today, corn was having resistance at the 50% retracement level of that early October decline. Today we gapped above that. We came within a half cent of filling that lead futures chart gap that was left after the September quarterly stocks report on that Monday morning. Mm-hmm. So if we could go ahead and get that filled here at 368, I think then that opens up the door then for at least a good solid test of the highs that we had here back in late September, which was like, I think, 389 or something like that on December corn.
Yeah, for those who are keeping score, because we do follow both the pit and the composite trade. That would be in the pit trade where the gap is, but there is no gap in the composite trade for the harvest month December contract. Pit trade, of course, there's a gap, and that's the chart we're talking about at the moment. And I think it's a push to 389.5 on the high.
Yeah, that would be the way
September
the corn
the
market looks. That's at least the target that we're going to kind of shoot for here, I think, over the next week or two, at least the chart people will be watching for something like that to happen.
Have we entered into a time, and at points you've told us that you thought that the acreage war was over. Are we about to ensue another war between corn and soybeans at this point or not?
Well, You know, the market is full of newsletter writers and copywriters. So, you know, there's always something that somebody has to come along with and dramatize it. But, it looks to me like we have more of a rolling situation in agriculture, and the market is signaling to the farmers to do one thing one time and then maybe signaling something else another time. And I think, you know, you can just kind of look what happened in the past 12 months. Basically, from a year ago, the October crop report set in motion that the function of the market was to expand acreage for the 07 crop year. So corn was the main focus starting a year ago, and it continued, you know, all the way into June. And once we found out that the market did accomplish what it set out to accomplish, was a big acreage increase, then the glory of the corn market kind of went to the back seat, and then all of a sudden the market said, wow, since we planted all this corn, now we ain't got no beans around. So now the money has flowed over into soybeans, and then the wheat crop didn't pan out as well as what the market was looking at. So it was a function of the soybean and the wheat market now to kind of make up for its shortfall over the past 2 to 3 months, while corn was kind of more in a sideways type market. And now it does indicate, at least with these private estimates and some government armchair guesses, is that the market now has, bought some acres. Soybeans have bought some acres away from corn. Wheat acres, we've bought some wheat acres away from corn. So now corn looks cheap compared to soybeans and wheat. So I think it's kind of more of a rolling situation. And the only thing I can tell farmers, at least my observation, is when the market is sending signals for you to expand acreage in one commodity or the other, and if you're inclined to go along with that or reward that incentive, I think then you have to maybe look ahead and lock in some of those price levels, because don't count on those being there by the time harvest comes around. And I think a classic example is the corn people that expanded corn acres waiting, thinking that we were going to have $4 and $5 corn this summer. All of a sudden harvest hits and corn's at $3 or $3.25, and thinking that beans were going to be $4 when they switched to corn, beans had the best harvest prices coming out of the field, you know, basically almost, you know, 3-to-1, not quite 3-to-1. But if you're going to shift your rotation based upon what the market is signaling, it's going to change your overall marketing pattern or marketing habits, I think, during a 12-month period.
All right. We appreciate you being with us for the dime.
Very well.
That's Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Thursday afternoon. Here's what the forecast for tonight looks like across the two-state region. In Illinois, mostly cloudy, a few lingering showers. In Indiana, cloudy, some thunderstorms widespread early. Those will diminish into the southeast overnight. Lows will range from around 52 in northwestern Illinois to 58 in the far southern parts of Illinois. And Friday to be cloudy, windy, and cooler. Widely scattered showers, mainly in the north and the east. Highs will range from 58 in the far northwestern part of Illinois to 70 in the southeastern part of Indiana. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with a look at all the day's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL Urbana. Don't forget to visit our website. It's at willag.org. That's willag.org.
In agricultural news, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says he wants a farm bill moved out of the Senate before the Thanksgiving recess. Congress is set to adjourn on November 16th. A Reid spokesperson says there will be a quick turnaround on the farm bill once it clears the Senate Agriculture Committee. A committee markup is anticipated next week. Meanwhile, details of the Senate farm bill were released yesterday. One proposal would cap adjusted gross income at $750,000 for non-farmers collecting subsidy payments. The bill would also require direct attribution of benefits. In other words, payments must go to an individual rather than a paper entity. Another proposal is tied to the belief that producers would be willing to take a cut in direct payments in return for a revenue assurance safety net called the Average Crop Revenue Program. Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin.
The commodities title of the proposal will give producers an option for the first time. This will begin in the 2010 crop year to choose between a state-level revenue protection program or remain in the traditional target price loan rate farm program. This new approach, called the average crop revenue, is similar to the Durbin-Brown proposal and that of the Iowa and national corn growers.
Under the ACRP, direct payments would be converted into a $15 per acre fixed payment based on the lesser of the base acres for all covered commodities on the farm or the average of acres planted to the covered commodities over the last 6 years, no matter where they are in the country and what they have grown. Insurance industry officials have expressed concern over ACRP, but Harkin says he expects those who opt for the average crop revenue program will buy crop insurance as well.
They'll be covered on a statewide basis, but they won't be covered individually or on a county basis. And because the premiums will be reduced, then I think they're going to buy up. I really think farmers will buy up more insurance in the future. Those that go into this program, that opt into this program. So I don't see it hurting the crop insurance people at all.
Harkin says the ACRP will result in savings of about $3.5 billion over 5 years, and those funds would be transferred to nutrition, conservation, energy, and rural development programs. Leading cellulosic ethanol industry leaders say the future of non-corn energy replacement depends on a new renewable fuel standard. Officials meeting in Chicago at a second-generation biofuels conference said federal lawmakers need to expand the existing 7.5 billion gallon RFS to give cellulosic ethanol a chance to succeed. In recent months, U.S. corn-based ethanol profitability has suffered from stagnant demand, lower ethanol prices, and above-average corn prices. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and Commodity Week, urging you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find most of the daily ag programming as MP3 files. You can listen to them directly off the website, or if you'd prefer to have them delivered to your computer as a podcast automatically, you can sign up for that too. It's all at willag.org. While you're there, don't forget to sign up for that free weekend newsletter. It's an awfully good one. I promise you will not regret it. It's all at willag.org. In today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkis says it's not who you know, but what you know.
With more than 2,800 county farm bureaus across America, the odds are tilted in favor of finding one near where you live. By far, the fastest way to find your local farm bureau would be to check the Yellow Page listings for a phone number or to call or look it up online. But suppose your phone book was nowhere to be found and your internet service was down. If you had to go out into your community and search for your local farm bureau, what would set it apart from organizations such as the Kiwanis or Rotary Club? All are voluntary organizations, and in the broadest sense, all share a common goal of working cooperatively to improve their local communities. Local farm bureaus diverge from other community organizations because farmer members typically embrace promoting and educating about agriculture as a way of connecting with the non-farm public in the communities in which they live. Today, if you're like most Americans, you are three or more generations removed from farming. Your life has taken a different direction than your ancestors, and you're not immersed in the day-to-day world of modern agricultural production. And yet, as members of the voting public and consumers, you carry the burden of making decisions that affect the future of food and fiber production. That is where Farm Bureau members involved in promoting and educating about agriculture in their communities come in. Their creative ideas include mobile agriculture science labs, virtual combines that simulate harvesting, reference guides on identifying crops, farm machinery and buildings placed along our nation's highways, and promoting ethanol and other renewable fuels with groups such as the Orange County Choppers. Addressing Misconceptions About Agriculture is a new interactive presentation on farming and ranching, and it's receiving rave reviews from farmers and non-farmers, both for its entertaining format and the depth of information provided. Who are these Farm Bureau members involved in promoting and educating about agriculture? They are the young and not-so-young men and women with a shared commitment to ensuring America's farmers are able to continue producing food and fiber for our nation. This is Amy Rochkis with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkis's comments are her own. They reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
A Thursday afternoon, we're joined now to take a look at the cash grain market by Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, there are awful high prices. Producers probably have sold quite a bit. Anything they ought to be doing otherwise than just shutting the bin door and not worrying about it?
Well, I think this is the time of the year where that's the decision that the producer makes, whether he wants to store or whether he wants to sell. And sometimes I believe that's a little bit too much black and white. Once you shut that bin door and decide you're going to store the crop, I don't think you want to just completely quit looking at the market and looking at market prices. In most areas, we have enough carry in the market to more than pay for the storage. Anywhere, looking at some of the prices I tracked this morning, anywhere from 15 to 22 or 23 cents difference between nearby corn, harvest corn versus January, for example, this morning. And that difference will narrow as we move through time. So, in other words, when you get to January, the nearby bid will be the January bid. And I think the farmer just needs to refocus on those January, March, May bids out there in the future. Once you decide to store it, don't forget to keep looking at prices.
And what are your bids for the day?
$3.29 for cash, $3.44 for Jan, $9.51 cash beans, $9.68 for Jan.
Anything else before I let you go?
No, I don't think good improvement on corn bases this week, especially along the river.
Okay, thanks much.
Thank you.
Bill Mayer is with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us here each and every Thursday afternoon. Time now for your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Two Republican members of Illinois' congressional delegation crossed over and voted to override President Bush's veto of a child health insurance bill. But the House failed to reach the two-thirds majority needed to override. Two area Republicans, Tim Johnson of the 15th District and John Shimkus of the 19th, voted to uphold the veto, as did Indiana Republican Steve Bouyer. Indiana Democrat Brad Ellsworth joined all but two Democrats in the U.S. House favoring the override, which would have expanded the state child health insurance program, or SCHIP. Republican aides say former House Speaker Dennis Hastert will resign before his term ends 15 months from now, but the congressman is staying quiet on the topic. The Illinois Republican wouldn't confirm or deny the resignation report when asked about it in Washington today. University of Illinois clerical employees gathered this evening to discuss the status of labor negotiations. The head of AFSCME Local 3700, Dorinda Miller, says talks are going slowly with U of I negotiators and are centered on financial matters. She says the university was unable to negotiate until it knew how state funding would shape up. About 1,500 clerical workers have been working without a contract since August. A coroner's jury has agreed with fire investigators that carelessly discarded smoking material caused the fire that killed a Champagne man and two of his stepchildren. Firefighters also say the home smoke alarm wasn't functional the night of the June 21st fire because the batteries had been taken out while someone was cooking. Many McLean County workers got the day off today thanks to a natural gas leak. It prompted the closure of the county's Law and Justice Center and the county health department in Bloomington. Construction crews hit a gas main just before 9, forcing the evacuation of both buildings. No injuries were reported, but some people showing up for civil and criminal court hearings were upset. Michael McRobbie is being inaugurated as Indiana University's 18th president during a ceremony on the Bloomington campus this afternoon. Hundreds of IU faculty members, presidents of other universities in the state, and five former IU presidents are expected to attend. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
I'm Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Mark Report, a Thursday afternoon. We're always joined by Pete Labatt to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Todd.
Been some awfully rocky weather. I think some more yet to come for our part of the world.
Yeah, there is. There's been this cold front working eastward through the Great Plains, and ahead of it, there's warm air, increasingly moist from Gulf moisture coming northward, and then this cold front behind it, which is going to trigger some showers and thunderstorms later today, despite the very pleasant weather, albeit a little windy, that you're having through there right now. It looks like we're going to see showers and thunderstorms developing in west central or central Illinois late today, this evening, and move on eastward. Some of them are locally severe, and the Severe Storm Center of the National Weather Service is forecasting some possibilities of severe thunderstorms and tornadoes from about eastern Illinois across Indiana late today and tonight. So that's the bad news in the forecast. Good news is that it clears out when this comes by, albeit slowly tomorrow, but then into the weekend we're going to see another stretch of very mild weather on Saturday, and especially on Sunday. Might see temperatures up in the 80s again on Sunday, and then more showers with another cold front, and then we get back to normal temperatures.
It seems more like springtime rather than October.
It does. You know, this is much more typical of spring to see these cold fronts producing severe weather, because usually you just don't have enough heat and moisture in the low levels this late in the season to generate that kind of activity.
Anything around the globe you've been keeping an eye on?
Well, two areas I think people are interested in. Finally, in Brazil, we're going to see the moisture get up north of Sao Paulo this week into Minas Gerais and the Mato Grosso. So prospects for getting some moisture to get the beans underway in that part of southern Brazil look good for this coming week. Meanwhile, they've had plenty of moisture farther south. No problem there. The other area of importance is Australia. And that's where they've had severe drought in the last 3 months. It's now a little too late for rain to help the wheat crop, so they keep losing their yield potential on the crop, which is maturing now. The rain will come. It'll come next week. But unfortunately, I think a lot of the wheat's going to be DOA by the time the rain arrives. That's a poor outlook there. And finally, in the Southern Plains, where the winter wheat crop is a little slow getting into the ground for a mixture of things, mostly because of early dry weather inability to get pre-planting field work done. We're seeing the planting behind schedule. Not too serious now, but if they can't get it in the next week or two, then we start getting into diminishing returns for yield potential for late planting.
Pete, thanks much.
My pleasure.
Pete Labatt, meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast around the state, the region, and the globe. He does a great job. Our thanks to him. Our thanks to you, too, for listening to the radio station and pledging your financial support. Dave Dickey and I sure do appreciate it. Join Dave tomorrow again at 8:49 for our first look at the commodity markets on the pre-opening Commodity Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a safe and a very good afternoon.